retrouvez toutes les émissions en podcast sur breastless.com.
Bienvenue dans Bang Bang, le meilleur de l'alternative rock et du métal. Et aujourd'hui, dans cet épisode, eh bien Ben, nous allons recevoir un groupe extraordinaire, un groupe que j'aime tout particulièrement, qui me parle énormément. C'est le groupe Health qui vont nous parler de leur album qui s'appelle Rat Wars, qui est excellentissime. Hello guys.
Hello.
Bonsoir.
How are you?
We are okay.
Yeah.
We're having a tired day. We're like very, very long day.
Sorry for my English. It's going to be I'm going to try. What does it mean to you to be in Paris? And what does this city represent to you, or France in general?
Well, we love Paris. For us, it represents the one place that we know we'll usually always have a good show in France. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we've played here a lot of times, and it really has felt like the only place that's kind of consistently embraced or understood our band has been Paris. But we're hoping that that's been changing because we've played some festivals recently and had really good experiences.
So are we crazy in France?
We know a lot of crazy Frenchmen.
Yeah, they work for us.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are crazier than...
We know a lot of crazy people.
Yeah. I mean, in the music industry, there's a lot of crazy people. Like, we know a lot of crazy German people.
It's socially acceptable to be... Can you cuss on this thing?
Can we curse?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. In the music industry, it's totally socially acceptable to be a fucking maniac or just insane or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of tolerance for bullshit. We love Paris.
Yeah, I love Paris.
Food's amazing.
Culturally, it's a very special place.
What a destination.
It's actually unfortunate that we're here... So short. We got in at like 10 a.m. and we've just been doing press, and then we have to leave at 6 a.m. to go to London. So it would be lovely to spend some time in the city, actually, especially because we don't have a show and we're seldom ever here and have the opportunity to enjoy doing something else other than just being in a fucking venue all day.
Yeah.
Having you here allowed me to immerse myself in your entire body of work. What a journey and what evolution, what art in never doing the same thing, in taking risks, in doing instead of doubting while keeping your identity. I just wanted to congratulate you for all that and for this latest creation, a true gem for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Santiv. Thank you very much. That was very sweet.
My first question will be about your feelings. How do you feel now that the album has been released?
Feels good. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know.
It's like you were pregnant and after everything is out.
Yeah, that sounds a little...
I don't know what it's like to be pregnant.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Of course.
I had a kid a couple years ago, and I think that the pregnancy was a lot more intense than the record. But, I think it's... I think relief is the wrong word because there's not a negative connotation to it. It's just we're kind of in an interesting stage right now where it's just out. And so it's very gratifying that people seem to really be resonating with this record in particular, fans and the critical community. But we haven't gone on tour yet. And tour is when you actually can really gauge...
Yeah,
you know, how people have ingested the songs and what songs they're really reacting to, and so that'll be interesting to see. We're on tour, but we're on basically a support tour right now. Mm,
So it's not really your audience, and you don't have, even if you have a feedback, it's not necessarily the feedback from.
We're playing new songs, but they're all fucking new songs to the fans to them, we're playing to, which is great, and we've been having really good shows, but it's not the same. You can't really gauge. The reception of the record,
of course, and maybe if I may ask for you, what is the some artists prefer to the creation part, and some like more the going on stage and sharing it with people. Is it for you? Do you feel like creating is over, you're like a bit sad of having to go on tour, or it's like the best part for you starting?
So for me, it's completely flipped. In the beginning of the band, writing records and particularly recording them, like recording technology and just being able to work from home and the power of like home computing and production has just made so many incredible leaps that the barrier to creativity is way lower. Because before you have all these ideas like, oh, what if we could make this really heavy sounding bass line or whatever? And it's like, fuck, we can't do it. And now it's just like, oh yeah, we can totally do that. So there's a lot less holding you back.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be for me, like, the recording process was like eating your vegetables, and then touring was dessert. Travel the world, party, see interesting places, get the energy from the crowd. And now I feel like it sounds really cliche to say it, but it's the total opposite. Like, I get off on the creativity, man. But it's true. Like, that, I really like the writing the records, and touring is sort of a little bit more like work. I still like being on stage, but as I said, I also had a kid, so it's like touring is more complicated.
Yeah.
I'm still in our default setting where, you know, work on the record is work and touring is play. And that's when you really, that's when you get off. That's when you get it going, you know? So,
I mean, it's a great, it's a fantastic job.
Yes.
Just because we, you know, we live in LA. We have a lot of friends that are in entertainment fields. And like what you guys are doing, it's like, I know a lot of editors. I know a lot of people that work in film and TV production. And it's like, you know, when you release something, if people like it, then immediately all you get to do is just go back to work on something else. And you're like, oh, cool, they liked it. We get to go out, and then every audience you play for in every country, in every city, every venue has a different character. And you get to re-interact with the art that you made with this reciprocity that comes from the crowd's energy. And
only music.
Yeah, it's just kind of...
You can't write a novel and be like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, you know, let's do a reading right now, fucking Moby Dick, let's go. It's like, just not the same thing, you know? So I think that, yeah, it's like, shades of gray, now I really prefer the writing, but the other part's great too.
Yeah.
Of course. How long did it take to create the new album? 4 years?
Is that right? No, it was pretty quick.
What would you say, 1.5?
Yeah, it was the fastest one. Oh, for sure.
You know, it's funny because it's 4 years since the previous record.
Yeah.
But there's two full collab records. Yeah. Those are longer than any of our records. So it's not like we weren't writing music up the yin yang. It just, you know, the pandemic, and we kind of delayed this album. We knew the album was important, and me and Jake definitely had to be in the same room, you know, to do it. So the collabs are fun as fuck, and we could do them remotely. So I was like, let's keep us going.
I think also, you know, there's like, it's not arbitrary because you need the touring cycle. Like, just from a capitalist standpoint of like being able to live, and but it is sort of counterintuitive that you write all this music and then right at the point where you're most creatively immersed and sort of probably at the highest level of fluidity in terms of being able to think quickly in terms of writing, then that's when you stop and you go on tour. And one thing that the pandemic and doing the collaboration records afforded us is we just kept fucking writing music for like 3 years straight. Yeah. So now we've, and it's just like anything else, you know, it's like whether or not you like try to stop smoking or go to the gym or eat better or whatever thing, it's like, it's all about consistency and staying in that routine. And so we've just been really trying to stay, like even now, just if we're home, keep writing. Because what happens a lot of times with bands is like, even if you don't have a grueling tour schedule, it just takes you out of that. So then you go back into tour mode. So then when you're home, you just sit on your ass and like wait until the whole cycle's done. And we don't want to do that. We'd rather just like keep, because you know, we're going to do another collaboration record. We want another record to come out sooner. Not because we're trying to like blitz everything, but just...
It's craps. When you're hot, you're shooting hot, keep shooting, you know?
It really is true, though. I think that, like, if you feel like you're in a good place writing-wise, it's a really bad move to stop, because you don't know what it's going to be like when you pick back up.
By the way, the collaborative album, did you thought doing so much, or did it came like you... Because there's two records of a
The second one is purely just because of the fucking pandemic.
Pandemic, we're like, oh,
we're like, we can't go back on tour.
So it wasn't really planned.
No, no.
Okay, that was my question.
Because like the title, Disco 4 Part 1. Oh, yeah. Like, this is the worst title in the world, you know?
Like, I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun because it's so terrible.
It's funny, you know? Like,
I mean, it's relative to what happened, you know?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Also really weird that it's like the band's called Health and it's like Disco 4 Part 2. And it's like with Nine Inch Nails. You're like, what the? And Lamb of God. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's so confusing.
Yeah, but I don't know. And also it was fun. You know, people just really love the collapse. They love it, you know?
Of course. It was a very serendipitous, lucky. The pandemic for us as a band was very lucky. It was actually like the band grew a lot. Obviously, when you do those kind of collaborative things, like tons of people that don't know your band find out about
you. Of course,
yeah. So it was maybe frustrating not knowing, because, you know, obviously there was a snapshot in time, especially if you're the kind of band that plays like 500 to 1,000 cap clubs. You're like, I don't know if this is ever, you know, like they're going to bring back outdoor shows and they're going to bring back film and TV production, but that's like the most intimate space. So,
you know, it's great though. Heavy metal people don't give a fuck.
That's true.
The second they opened, we played Psycho Vegas. Like, no one's gonna go to this thing. No, they don't give a fuck.
It's really interesting because it's like kids. So if it's music for young people, they don't give a fuck. They're there. Heavy music people don't give a fuck. And then like all the like smart clown like indie music, like where you like got good grades and shit. Everyone's just like, I think I wanna stay home. So it's just like it was this total we know bands that was their fan base, and it's like that still hasn't come back. Especially if you're of a certain age, like as we all know, like live music, a lot of shit, like people age out, you know, they get a real job, they stop being addicted to drugs, they stop going to shows. And I think the pandemic like pushed a lot of people
a lot of early retirement from going to gigs.
Like we played a show last night. And even this one dude was, he was telling us he'll see us at club shows. He'll travel, but he doesn't want to go to festivals because even post pandemic, he just doesn't want to be around that many people. And it's like I understand that.
Well, a lot of people develop very bizarre complexes, you know.
Yeah,
that's so strange. Yeah, this new album is called Rat Was, like the 8th song from Slaves of Fear. Is there a connection? Is this album detailed continuation of that previous episode?
No. So,
okay, that's a good answer. We'll stop there.
No, sorry. It's been interesting. We've done an immense amount of press, and for whatever reason, the French press is very interested in the name of this
record.
You guys are good. Attention to detail.
Very thoughtful. Very thoughtful.
So I'm trying not to be like too shorthanded here. Basically, we really felt that it was important to have a name that was evocative of what the record sounded like, which is sort of like desperate and oppressive and very bleak and dystopian. And
We'd already used that title.
And we were having a conversation. I was just like, dude, do you know what the perfect... We had all these... We're sending each other back and forth, like, what about this? What if we try to call it this? And it's like, it needs to feel like post-apocalyptic. And some of the names were good, but they were like, oh, they're too fun for what the music was. And I was kind of like, you know what? Fucking Rat Wars is what we should have called it. And we were like, well, we can't, though, because we already had a song like that.
That's okay.
And then we realized, A, it's our song, so we do whatever we want. B, most people will not notice.
I think it was the C.
And then C, the biggest one was we're like, the Doors have a song called Waiting for the Sun. It's not on the album Waiting for the Sun.
And it came out.
It came out of Morrison Hotel. It's like
two albums later.
It's like, fuck it. Yeah. The Doors did it. We'll do it.
It was the Doors.
Yeah, it was the Doors.
We couldn't have, we would have not done it without the Doors.
Like you said,
it's like precedent in the law. You know, you find that one. It's like there was a case in 1986.
Like you said, it's extremely dark. It's like a prophecy, isn't it?
I hope not.
I think it's appropriate. I think we've been making this dystopian sci-fi music forever, and it's modern day is getting shittier and cyberpunk by the day, and it's caught up to us.
Yeah, it's kind of like we've been making soundtracking this future primitive techno, like
techno dystopia.
Techno dystopia. Dark shithole. And it's like, now we're like, we stuck around long enough. It's like, oh, it just happened.
We knew it.
Yeah, yeah.
We were there.
We stayed in the game long enough for everything to go to total shit.
Yeah, we were ahead of our time.
And now, so then now we look like visionaries. Yeah, it's like, yeah. But it's really because we just didn't figure out how to do anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when we listen to it, I find it's very mystical, religious, something that connects us to the best things, like Earth, what has given to us, why we represent hell, chaos, humans. So what do you think about this? Am I crazy or am I saying bullshit?
That's beautiful,
or?
Man.
It's beautiful, and if that, I would hate us to ruin any, you know, the audience creates half the drone of anything, and we definitely want, if someone feels something and, like, interprets it, that's the best thing in the world. We'd hate to be like, actually, it's about this time when I stubbed my toe in, like, you know, 2008. You know, like, something like that.
I try not to be too specific about, like, the lyrical meaning, because I feel like the way I write is it's not very shrouded in symbolism and metaphor. It's fairly direct. Direct enough to the extent that I would hate to, like, disabuse anybody of what their take on the record is. I mean, I think it's fairly... it's direct in its themes, I think, and it's not like actually secretly a happy record or a joke or anything like that. I mean, it's like, it's not an affectation. It is sad, you know, but there are a lot of layers to that and what that can mean, and what it means to try to still live an authentic existence, like, in the context of dealing with those emotions.
I will talk about more about the lyrics after, but I feel like you can put this record on Akira. You know Akira?
IKEA?
Akira.
No, Akira. Oh, Akira.
Definitely IKEA, not IKEA.
I mean, Akira, you know, that's... Jake, you really got to watch Akira.
I've seen parts of it.
You really got to watch Akira. Like, the movie changed my life. But yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's quite the same, though.
It's a quite intense movie. Yeah.
After listening to this afternoon, the sound atmospherically... I saw you. I saw it indeed as a cinematic album. You have to listen to it from the beginning to the end, and you have an adventure, something that you can leave. Is there a story?
So it's, we would call it a loose concept album. Lyrically, a lot of our records are dealing with the same themes, but this one is much more personal. From my perspective, it's just kind of what my experience was over the last couple of years. But it's not a concept album in the way that Quadrophenia or Tommy or Lamb Lies Down on Broadway would be, or something like that. Looser, more in the sense of, like, Dark Side of the Moon or something, where it's kind of more in the musical structure and how things, like, link together, and there's basically, like, a story and a theme. But it's not like, oh, no, this is the part in the screenplay where this character does this kind of thing. But yeah, to answer your question, it was very much, I think more so than any other record we've done, conceived to be an entire cohesive record. So we know that most people don't listen to music like that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't have to stop us from wanting to make it the way that we want to.
I mean, all our records we really want you to listen to. We put a lot of thought into the sequencing, but this one is, I guess, more like, you know, we let stuff cut off abruptly.
Yeah.
Just stick tracks together before on streaming, and even from iTunes is a bad idea. And we said, fuck it.
Yeah, we knew. It's like, okay. And we know because we have a very active fan base. They're very internet literate and they're all on Discord and everything. And like a lot of the super fans that are young, super fans, of their own admission, don't listen to the whole record.
No, they've never listened to it in sequence. And then a song came up, and they're like, this is amazing. What is this? I'm like, motherfucker, it's like,
I think it's also generational.
It's generational. Yeah, they don't have the bandwidth.
Yeah. So actually what inspired this, so like, to just go for it. So there's a Metro Boomin album, and it's blowing Zoomers' minds because it's just like brazenly doing these Pink Floyd like crossfades of just song to song. And all these Zoomers are like, what the song concept? What the hell's going on? And like, they're going to listen, you know, in a row, and everyone liked it so much. It's like, well, fuck it. You know, if we have a cutoff, and like, it's going to draw more people to have to listen to our songs in sequence, and they're doing it, which is great.
I mean, it's also amazing those things that happen where, you know, you get younger generations, like, because there's all this new metal shit in here. Like, so many young people are discovering industrial music and metal, like they discovered like the, it's like the dark ages and there's literature again or something.
Yeah.
And so this same kind of thing that John's talking about with, we grew up on like AOR, like album oriented, like classic rock. So to us, that's second nature. But if you could pull someone into that world, they're like, oh, it's so cool. The song bleeds into the next one. And then there's a theme from the first song and it reappears. It's like, is this fucking classic rock, baby?
Well, for me though, I'm just like, how do these kids not hear Dark Side? You start smoking weed, you can put on Dark Side. Yeah. Everyone. I guess not.
I think you still do.
Actually, wait, a lot of these kids don't leave their house.
I think you still, people still listen to Dark Side.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's, you know.
I just figured our fans would have heard Dark Side.
Do you already participate to a film or to do the music of a film?
We would love to do. We did one small indie film and we've done a lot of composition for video games, which is actually like, you know.
It's kind of the new version of
a movie.
And honestly, it's in a lot of ways more relevant. It's especially speaking of younger generations, like that's the long form entertainment that they actually get
it's
involved
actually
in.
Better because you can't look at your phone while you fucking play.
Yeah.
So in that respect, we'd actually prefer to do another big game instead of doing a film. We always dream of doing
and
a
you're
film.
A like, character.
We love movies, but when someone's watching a movie, they're doing this. So the game, you're doing this. That's
now better. It's like, even if you're, everyone's streaming whatever show, they're like, oh my God, did you see Succession? I loved it. It's like, but you're probably on your phone like 80% of the fucking time. And because we all do that. So like games, you're, it's like gaming and sports.
Well, I guess
are
reading
last,
a novel, but people aren't doing that.
Man, people haven't been reading a novel
for a minute.
Like I have a literature degree, and even then I was like, people don't even read. I still do, but I mean.
I think an action sci-fi, big game, or RPG, but something either action or futuristic, I mean, we'd really love to do it. Clear a schedule for that stuff. Actually, maybe not right now, because I think we're kind of on a, you know, as you're saying with Craps, we're kind of on a hot streak. We want to keep it going. But
I mean, I would love, it would be a dream of mine to score a great film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that a game, a great game is more meaningful.
I think also if we got a small role in that film, like Anthony Kiedis or Henry Rollins, where you get your ass kicked in the movie too.
Nine Point Break.
Or Heat. But, Heat? That's the best. That's a dream. You know, Henry Rollins and Heat.
Okay, I'd write a movie for you.
What would the precedent be for that for someone who scored the film?
Okay, you score the movie and have the Henry Rollins role.
Talk
about that.
That's the movie.
Does anything exist like that?
I would have to look it up.
Probably not.
No. It's not like Trent Reznor. What if in The Social Network, like parking a car or something?
I would demand it. Or if I was the guy who did Oppenheimer, I would just be in some scene where I get like my ass kicked or something. I don't know.
I don't think
like
you can tell Christopher Nolan.
I don't think so either. This is all the theater of the mind. You know, we do whatever we want.
John Williams is like, all right, Spielberg, I get one full frontal nude scene.
It's like, he's just too good. We got to do it.
We have to have John Williams. He's like, he's so
Johnny
cool.
Williams wants it. He's Show like, me that.
All right.
Can we talk about the guitar in Of All Else? You know, there's a part with the guitar like really slow and it's
which
like
part?
At the end.
And it's really dark, it's really something special. I thought it was like church things at the beginning. I don't know why.
Like an organ or something.
And after I thought about a really dark march, like a military thing, really dark, really something morbid.
I don't know.
I think is that something new?
The reason we put that in the record was John's idea was that it's completely unlike anything we've ever put in one of our records. Mm. So it was just like sort of a way to, it's very kind of unnerving sounding and the track that precedes it is extremely experimental, so it's almost kind of perversely avant-garde to put something like just like a clean guitar at the end of it.
Well, not just that, it's influenced by Silent Hill, you know. Those Silent Hill really the PS1 really bit crushed up front clean guitars, and they do that, they go clung clung, so it's very much, you know, in Silent Hill, you know, that PS1 bit crushed like unsettling sound, and that's you know, a lot of the production do these kind of weird narrative, which is some of like these sort of tones or something like that too.
And you work with the French artist Sia.
Mm-hmm.
How did you meet and how things happen?
Just a huge admirer, and then reached out. Like, you know, we were really inspired by the, you know, EBSM, terrible genre name. But Sierra is one of my favorite artists in the zone. And after discovering her, every magazine I've interviewed, I've been always been mentioning. And immediately we're like, we gotta get this on the album. You know, we reached out to people to bring these. We decided we're going to add arpeggiated synths. And we're going through tunnels. We're like, to fuck this. We're calling pros. So Sierra was definitely one on the top of the list to hit up.
We're really firm believers in the idea of making an album holistically, like just with the only goal being to create the best thing possible. And not coming from this sort of precious, I think especially sort of pervasive in indie rock idea of it's this insular thing and you can't let anybody into it. And I think a lot of the great records that are made are made collaboratively. So when we hear something, if we want to use an arpeggiated synthesizer and someone like Sierra is incredibly talented at that, we'd rather tap that person to see if they're interested in helping us create that sound. And then we can take that and then bring it into our world. And obviously we became very, very comfortable doing this kind of thing after doing those two collaboration records. So any barrier that we would have had in the past of like, oh, it might be kind of weird. Should we ask them? We don't give a fuck now.
Yeah. We used to be very, very precious. And now we're pretty hetero flexible, as you'd say, you know, so we're just kind of open to stuff.
And people are precious. And also I think it's like a social anxiety thing. You think, is it going to be awkward to ask someone? And in the pop world, in the hip hop world, and then if you look at a lot of classic industrial stuff like Ministry, Nine Inch Nails, that those records are full of guest players. Yeah. That's how they made them. You know, there wasn't, because the music is not about chops in industrial music. So there's not the identity of some guys like, well, I need to fucking rip a face melter solo and that's me. No, that doesn't matter.
And do you feel that when you have an idea that is relative to another artist, like Pedjetov in this case, don't you feel that bringing the guy or the girl to do it with you makes it more personal, that if you try to integrate it by just kind of copying what you heard?
Well, it's also more honest.
Yeah.
Because we're listening to whatever thing and we're really inspired by her music. Yeah. And we want to do something like that. So it's more open to just say like, well, why don't you just do it with us?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a cool thing too. It's like EBM or EBSM. It's like this kind of, you know, EDM sonics with EBM like update. It's kind of like a parallel thing to like, we're doing industrial, this like neo-industrial with these like modern sonics too, where it's something like retro and futuristic at the same time. Yeah. So just kind of perfect, you know? So like, get on the phone.
There are quite a few emotions mixed in the experience this new album offers. Drugs, for me, love, control. Is this also from your own experiences?
Yes. I don't know how much I want to expound on all of that. There's definitely a lot of personal writing. Not just drugs, but I think any.
Yeah, when I mean drugs, it means a lot of things, not only drugs like we used to.
But just any compulsive, addictive behavior, I think, is a theme in the record. And that sort of destructive miswiring of evolutionary biology that so many of us have that drive us to process those needs
and like intense music
in a destructive way.
Because, you know, I thought like drugs, like love is drugs,
yeah,
and maybe it can be destructive, but it can be so beautiful at the same time. Like in the album, we can feel all these waves, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's about, like I said, all kinds of different layers, like literal drugs, repetitive destructive thinking, dissolution of personal relationships, and
Goonin.
It's not a happy record, that's for sure.
I mean, for sure. my favorite song, I believe, it's Crack Metal, so that's why I'm talking about this. It's like very 90s sound. Is that deliberate?
Yes.
Be like,
no question.
Nine Inch Nails, I'm sorry.
No. Hey, we're listening to Ministry and Nine Inch Nails. We're listening to Burning Inside. We're listening to Wish. We're also listening to March of the Pigs.
Okay.
So. And we're like, you think, let's do it.
I think, you know, there was definitely a moment where we're like, is this too much of an homage to these bands? But the thing is, it's like, we've been in that orbit and we've also, you know, we've had this collaborative relationship with Nine Inch Nails now. And I think it comes back to what we were saying about getting the person to guest on the track, like Sierra. It's like, well, we kind of want to, it's almost like that track is deliberately going, hey, we know that this record is indebted to classic industrial music. We're doing our take on it. And here's our little like nod to being inspired by these bands.
Yeah. If you go to the album, there's kind of like, because we really want to send this message like industrial. We still want to make our record, don't be too referential, but there's sort of like a checklist of industrial metal, and we're like, here you go, and we're not being shy about it.
Yeah, because
and also there's things about that are very different. You know, we have this bass line that wouldn't be international, but of course we don't.
Yeah, there's songs on there. It's like you know, the like DSM-5 sounds like a Ministry riff. You know.
Oh. I'm going to say anything.
Yeah, I know.
Obviously, it's like Rammstein, but to me, everybody always says Rammstein, but to me, Rammstein sounds like Ministry.
Yeah, of course.
It's like,
it's younger.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so, and then.
You're right.
You know.
Well, like, obviously, we sampled Godflesh.
Godflesh, it's like we just put it in the album. We're like, fuck it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very clear. You know, it's not.
Really? It sounds. No, it's really nice because, you know, Nine Inch Nails doesn't do it anymore. So, well, I was so happy. Like, and I'm a young again.
I would have been more uncomfortable. Like, there's certain melodic territory I feel like that is so distinctly, like, trademarked by him.
Yeah, we would feel it's like a ripoff.
Like in terms of like,
because you have your take on it.
Yeah, there's like piano things and there's melodies. Course, that, and you hear it when bands do it sometimes. Yeah, and you're just very, like, ooh, that's clear, like, that's his thing. And.
Yeah,
but the energy level and kind of the structure of it, and like my voice is so, I don't scream ever, so
yeah. And there's a lot of this. There's a lot of wacky stuff, you know. Like we like the song. Yeah, you know?
It's definitely inspired by.
Yeah. Clearly.
And you know, when we talk about health, the band, so we think about the dark romanticism. We think about your voice. It's a special voice on this kind of music, like. Or can I say it? Delicate, maybe, or something really
effeminate.
Like we fly, like
flinty.
Yeah, why?
That's just how my voice works.
It's better for you, or you? I'm just not this.
So the scene we came out of, it's like this very underground noise scene in Los Angeles, and every band, a lot of the music was heavy, but in a non-traditional sense, very aggressive, very abrasive, and extremely experimental. But in that context, not a lot of melody, and it was a scene that was sort of subverting stereotypes in even in punk rock, you know. So anything that was like masculine or on the nose was sort of not part of it. And part of how everybody processed that was to do this sort of Devo bark kind of singing, which makes sense because so much of the music didn't have any real melodies. Mm. And I just, by default, I don't feel comfortable affecting my voice that way. And I knew I wasn't going to be good at it. And so the way we sort of approached doing things differently was to have this very maybe jarring contrast of very soft, almost like shoegaze vocals top of it. And I think that that's, as we've gone further down the rabbit hole of exploring adding thrash music, like our thrash guitars or arpeggiators or things that are hallmarks of other genres like industrial music, the one thing that does save us consistently from just being like a recapitulation or a retro version is that none of those records or bands have vocals the way that we do.
Also, we don't have any other option. From the beginning, it just made us different. Like, that's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess I could have spent, like, a lot of time trying to figure out how to scream, but it seems more practical to work with what you have, and that's sort of just how my voice works.
And it's like everything we've done, everything so gradually. It's just we just keep rolling, you know.
Oh, that's good.
And how do you compose, by the way? Do you
there's no formula? Like there's Jake demos, there's John demos, there's stuff we come up in the studio, stuff we work with the producer.
Drum beats. There's all.
Yeah, there's everything. It's just whatever we have. There's just really no formula, or there's just like this wacky sound. Well, how do we figure this out? And we wait months and come back to songs, and it's just, you know, for the greater good. I think we all trust each other.
Yeah, try to stack ideas so that we have a lot of things that like we can refer to.
If someone really hates something, you know, you believe them, because I think we trust each other taste-wise.
Yeah, and we'll have, there's definitely going to be songs on a record where it's like, this is more of a John song, or this, but this one felt very...
We all have the same mission. We're really on the same page. We're like, I think that's this album was made. I think it was made for a place of just much more confidence than before. We're like, we really were all like, okay, we know what we need to do. Even though this is really good, we're actually going to toss it because this is not dark enough, or this is not going to go where we need to go. Mm-hmm. Like, we're making this thing, you know? Because there's really good songs that we're like, didn't put on the record, which is like hard for us, you know?
And you know, you make me cry with this album. So congratulations.
Oh. That's good.
Because I feel something really, really strong. Is this a therapy for you?
For me specifically, and that's been a question that's come up, is the writing of this record was, and the particularly the second collab record and this one, it was very much a therapeutic and cathartic process. Where I guess the way I would put it would be, if I hadn't had that as a way to let out certain emotions, I think that. Because it ultimately is a constructive, creative process. I think the alternative would have been destructive. So
is like I cry, and like I feel when I hear the sounds, I feel like when I was young, when I had to do my coming out, and it was so strong, so dark, so everything was totally dark. And today I feel so happy because I did it. It's like in your songs, you know? There's something really rude, and after at the end we feel that we can fly and we can be free. You know what I mean?
Well, that's amazing.
That's
amazing. Like, thank you. Like, wow, that's very meaningful to hear.
Yeah, thank you.
That the music could elicit those kind of feelings. So that's the greatest thing that we could strive for as a band. You know?
And yeah, I mean it's just all music is about emotion on every level. You know?
And you talk a lot about a child. You say the word child.
I became a dad, in the middle of this. So it was something that was just like on my mind a lot, especially because there's a lot of profundity and a lot of amazing, deep emotions and love to an extent that I had never felt before, but also like an incredible amount of responsibility and fear, but also simultaneously, just with my personality type, when you're going through a very difficult time emotionally and then the world also seems like it's going to total shit and then you're like, oh, I decided to have a kid. And it's like, it's just knowing that they have to go through so much frustration and grief and difficulty that wasn't their choice to come into existence. So I think that was just a very heavy thing for me to try to process.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. We're going to say maybe the end of the interview. Yeah. Will you come in France to do a show next year? You will do Hellfest? I think so.
I don't think we can do Hellfest.
I think we're eligible.
Because we played in 2022. Oh. So I think we have to wait till 25.
So you will be playing in Paris?
Definitely.
We're definitely playing in Paris.
No question.
You know when?
No. It'll be in the fall. It'll be in the fall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
because we're doing a U.S. tour in
spring. We will
spring.
Do some summer festivals. I don't know if there are French ones.
Yeah, and then we'll be back in Europe for Roadburn and then some other festivals in the mid-summer. And then we'll be back again for a headline in the fall.
So thank you for everything. I got a lot of questions, but time is out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming here and to answer all like this. And thank you so much for the music.
Thank you guys. For this album. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
See you.
Toutes nos émissions et chroniques sont maintenant disponibles sur vos plateformes de podcasts préférées. Spotify, Deezer, Apple, Amazon. N'hésitez pas à vous abonner.